Driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
One of the wonderful things about Twitter is you can find out what people are up to. And Jo Kuzienska has tweeted to say that she's waiting for Alan, Cambridge 105's Alan of Flavour fame, to turn up for a guided tour of the Afternoon Teas Cafe. So we know what's coming up in Flavour on Saturday lunchtime now at 12 o'clock. And also Mark Turner has sent us a note with regard to the fridge. He says he thinks the self-adjust fridge is cool. Thank you, Mark. It's 29 minutes before 6 o'clock. It is Zero Waste Week. And to talk about that, we've got Emma Cross here, along with Sylvie Cobb. Now, Emma is the Recycling Champions Coordinator at Cambridge City Council, and Sylvie Cobb is the Recycling Champion. Emma, can I first of all congratulate you on your title? I think I'm collecting these. I quite like Recycling Champions Coordinator. That's very good. I used to have one once, Acting Territorial Executive Officer is quite good.
So. I'm never sure whether it should have an S with the champions or just be champion.
I don't know. It's like when you put the apostrophe. Well, I have to send for Daniel on that one later. Yes. to work out where it might go. Anyway, Emma and Sylvie, you're both very welcome indeed. Emma, if we start with you, what's Zero Waste Week all about?
So Zero Waste Week is a national week, and it happens every year. This year, the theme is, it's all about food. So it's called Use It Up this year. And it's all about trying to reduce your food waste. So we know lots of people in the UK are wasting a lot of food. The average family will waste £50 of food a month. And in Cambridge, we know the black bins are made up. 29% of the black bin is made up of food waste. So it's all about trying to get people to think about their food waste and reduce it as much as possible.
See, the supermarkets don't help us here much, do they? Because they put on these use-by dates and these sell-by dates on the packets, and you're thinking yourself, oh no, it's past 10 past 2 on the 13th, so I can no longer use this.
Yeah, so with the use-by dates and the best-before dates and the display-until dates, there's a whole variety of things to confuse people. You can basically ignore the display-until dates because they're just for the shops used. You shouldn't eat anything that's past its use-by date because that is about the food safety. But things past their best-before date should also be fine. They're just not at their complete best, but they're still normally completely safe to eat.
So, I guess if you get to send for Sylvie, who will hopefully have some advice for us.
Either stick my finger in it or sniff it.
That's a very good method. How do you get to become a recycling champion?
Well, I saw an article in the Cambridge Evening News and phoned up the guy who's in charge, who I don't know whether he was more shocked than I was, but, you know, I was number one. So I became a recycling champion. And what you do is you tend to go round a lot of these shows that are on over the summer and this Christmas fairs and things like that, and we go there and we have a stand and we have various bits and pieces and lots of nice giveaways as well, and we just talk to people about what they can do to be able to cut down on their waste, and especially this time with the food waste.
Yeah, and the food waste is pretty challenging, and sort of juggling the sort of the I don't know how it almost starts, I guess, at the shopping list and making sure that you're setting things out rather than just going into the shop and pulling a whole things off the shelf because they might be nice for tea, forgetting the stuff you might have at the back of the fridge.
Absolutely, yes. And if you have leftovers, there's lots you can do with them. But people nowadays don't seem to want to keep leftovers. It's because, I suppose, it's the throwaway mentality, you know, we just chuck it away. Mm. You can make a really nice pate if you've had roast vegetables for lunch. Whatever you've got left over, put it in a liquidiser with just a small amount of olive oil, whiz it up, you've got a nice pate to put on your toast for lunch.
Do you think half the problem is that we've kind of lost the ability to cook? And there's lots of, you know, cookery shows and the like on television, including the wonderful Great British Bake Off. But amidst all of that, they're telling you how to make things to start off with. They're not really offering any tips on what to do with stuff that you might already have, or how to mix and match a bit, perhaps.
These cookery shows are great for special occasions. If you want to do something special, you've got somebody coming round for dinner, then it's really good. You can do something from them. But for every day, a lot of it takes quite a bit of time to do, and, you know, people don't have the time to spend playing around with food.
So what would your advice be for somebody, you know, what's the starting point for all of this? How can somebody, say, start afresh? You know, they clean out their fridge, maybe the last time they've thrown away something that they shouldn't have done. What should they do to start it all off?
When you go shopping, make a list and stick to it. It's terribly difficult, but try and stick to it. Then at least you have an idea of what you've got, and make a menu for the week.
Because those conniving supermarkets will be moving around where they keep things.
Tell and me about it.
They'll be putting special offers in front of you, saying, come to me, and you'll be wanting to get those. And then your list kind of goes out the window. And
well, they have these, you know, 3 for 2 or 2 for 1 or whatever it is. But if you've got a list and you've got, you know what your menu is, if it's something that's on your list and you've got a freezer, why not make use of it? If you're going to get 2 things for the price of 1, put one of them in the freezer.
Because very often, easy. Otherwise, it's like, you know, buy one, get one you don't want absolutely free, isn't
yes.
it? And the one you don't want can, I guess, a lot of the time, not every time, but quite often end up in the freezer.
A lot of food you can freeze. There's not an awful lot. I did have a list earlier and it did say lettuce, don't freeze. And I thought, who needs to be told you don't need to freeze lettuce?
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yes, absolutely.
There is a surprising amount you can freeze, though. Things I didn't realise, like cooked rice, for example, you can put in the freezer. And also things like if you've got some bananas that are going off, if you just peel them and chop them up, then you can freeze them.
Really? But what happens when they come out? Do they just not go bad again?
Well, no, but then, like, I guess, say you've got a glut of bananas you don't want to use at that time, then you can freeze them and, like, later make a smoothie.
It's a smoothie time
a
when it comes
cake,
out.
That
okay,
kind of
now
thing.
That makes sense. And I guess it's little things, isn't there? You know, people who will go out and, I don't know, buy freshly grated breadcrumbs when all they really need to do is keep what's in the bottom of the bread bin grated and, again, bung it in the freezer, presumably, for later use.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do ordinary things, you know, simple things like that. Another thing is putting leftover bread, before it goes nice and green and mouldy and starts walking out the door, you put it in a bag in the freezer, and then when you've got some more, you put some more in. And you can do things like bread pudding, which is nice, and it's really filling. And
I love bread pudding.
it's
not yet that time of year for it.
No,
so it's kind of heading in that direction, isn't it? We know in a few weeks that it'll be like that to do.
But it's simple things that you can do, but I think, because I'm a person of a certain age, I remember having leftovers.
Mm. You're the bread pudding generation.
I'm the bread pudding generation, yes. I have to admit that. And I do like bread pudding. So it's all sorts of bits and pieces you can put away. If you've had new potatoes and you've got some left over, why not chop them up and sauté them? Then you've got something nice, a bit different. It's fried potatoes by another name, but, you know.
Just posh, isn't it? It's causing an accent on the E. It doesn't make it so much better. and Emma, I guess this sort of takes pressure off your colleagues in the refuge department as well, because they're not going to be carting away a whole load of stuff that actually is perfectly good in the first place.
Yeah, it's just such a waste, really, when all this kind of energy goes into producing food in the fields, and then it all gets transported over here, packaged up. We go and buy it, and then it just ends up in a bin. There's been so much kind of energy and water invested in that, and it's just ridiculous if it then ends up in the black bin. Also, if it does end up in the black bin, we're all paying for it as council taxpayers, because we're having to pay for the landfill tax. So, yeah.
It also soon ends up. So does your remit sort of stretch into sort of packaging and that side of things as well?
We talk to people about how they can recycle their packaging and things, but I'm not so involved in kind of how to reduce packaging, but there is kind of other projects working on that. Packaging often gets quite a bad name, but a lot of the packaging in food is quite useful in like preserving the food and keeping it in good condition, because there's been so much energy used to produce the food. It's really good that the packaging's there and keeping it fresher for longer. So often if you buy something like bread rolls or I don't know, sliced meat or something in packaging, it stays fresher for longer. If you do keep it in that packaging, it's a significant amount of time it'll stay better.
So I guess there's pluses and minuses. I think there's something like, say, strawberries. I remember when strawberries used to come in a cardboard punnet. But now they seem to come in a plastic punnet. And I thought that would have made them sweat, and would probably make them go off sooner.
No, it doesn't appear to. No. But who has strawberries left over?
That is a very good point. That is a very good point indeed. Not likely to happen. Certainly not in my house. That's for sure. So, if people want to find out more about, is there some sort of website or information leaflets people can pick up to further improve their skills in all of this?
Yeah. So, if you're interested in getting involved in the Zero Waste Week, you can go to the website, which is zerowasteweek.co.uk. And you can sign up there, and the week started on Monday, but it's going on all the way through till next Sunday. You can sign up, and they'll send you email tips every day, which are actually really good. And they've got lots of recipe ideas on there as well, and things of ways to reduce your food waste. And also, if you're interested in the Recycling Champions scheme, you can email me at recyclingchampions.cambridge.gov.uk.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, Emma and Sylvie, thank you very much for coming in to 105 this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Cambridge 105. Now, if you are a woman of parts and have the confidence to try something daring and new by way of designer clothing, why not experiment with sculptural clothing made by an artist? Brenda Mayo has recently returned to Cambridge after living in France and found her work to be taking her in new directions, which have to be explored because of their feminine and tactile nature. Arts Roundup Simon Burton reports.
Here I am in Mount Pleasant in the north of Cambridge at the top of Castle Hill in a rather splendid apartment with artist Brenda Mayo, who has recently returned from living a very stylish life in the south of France. Brenda, hello.
Hello. I wouldn't say stylish exactly. It was extremely remote and very rustic. But memorable.
What was the name of this wonderful village that you were living in? Because it's right up in the hills.
It has a very curious name of Davajan, and curious to the French in addition to the English. It's exactly halfway between Carcassonne and Perpignan.
And now you've been designing your clothing as well as being a painter.
That's right, yes. Well, I'll explain how I came to be devoting so much time to designing and making clothes. When I lived in Cambridge and taught here in Cambridge, I would make clothes after I finished the teaching term and before I could get going again with my painting. So I would sit at the sewing machine with my thoughts in the studio, but sewing and handling material, which is what I particularly like doing. And when I went to France, the interface between teaching and retiring was a significant scale. So I started devoting more and more time to the business of handling fabrics and making clothing, and in fact found in a brocante, as it's called, like a kind of flea market, say, a huge bolt of old French linen. And I used this French linen to invent a garment which I found a link to the world of the Cathars within. The Cathar castles are very prominent within that zone of France where I was living, in the foothills of the Pyrenees. And so I had the lifestyle of the Cathars kind of lingering in the back of my mind. And I made this very rustic, very oddly shaped garment, which for me had some sort of resonance with the medieval period. And after some months, I discovered that painting hadn't quite got going again, and I was still making the clothing and beginning to invent all sorts of quite interesting shapes.
Was there a moment when the art and the clothing just came together and you evolved into something new?
It became sculptural. The clothing was less to do with painting, as was my principal background, but much more to do with sculpted forms. And I also have a bit of a background with dance, and the idea of how one moves when wearing clothing began to determine to some extent how I manipulated the fabric, what sort of fabrics I chose to work with. and so on.
So you were given this great impression by the surroundings, and then you effectively made living art within them.
In a way, yes, one could say that. Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. Yes, so things that have a life of their own, even when not being worn. Things that you could actually enjoy seeing hanging on the wall, perhaps.
Looking at your clothing, it is wonderfully bright. It's very, very bold. It's very, very tasteful. And it has a lovely aesthetic. Does that translate to a place like Cambridge, do you think, when you take it out of that context?
Well, to pick up on the idea that your mention of the colour and so on, that particular element is stimulated by my enthusiasm for kimonos and Japanese traditional garments, where you notice the most extraordinary combination of pattern and colour. Very small checkered fabrics with lucid and curvy linear floral designs, reference to the natural world, to plant forms and insect forms and so on, all coming together within a particular garment, a single garment. For example, a kimono, which is a very, very simple shape, bringing together all these patterns and textures. How that relates to Cambridge... that's an open question.
They seem to have, I mean, they're black and white in a kind of oriental way, but they have a kind of a crispness that go with feelings of feeling comfortable with yourself, for inner peace, and feeling relaxed, bright, and happy in the way that many oriental art.
Do you mean black and white in the sense of that graphic,
yes,
very graphic sense?
Yes,
that
I
they
do.
Have, not necessarily black and white in terms of colour.
Yeah.
I think one has to have a certain degree of, we'll say, confidence, certainly comfort within the garment, because it has its own identity. It has a characteristic quite distinctive. And if one feels hesitant about carrying off something which is quite striking, then one might have to wait for the right moment. One wakes up some mornings and feels, you know, you just want to hide. Other days, you feel, oh, I'd like to be enveloped in that kind of sculpted form.
You have to be quite daring to wear clothes that are a bit out of the ordinary. Is that a thing about, when you mentioned confidence, but it's also about having a certain kind of maturity, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely right. Yeah. Yes, because I think youngsters tend to, they need to be similar to their peer group.
Yeah.
As one matures, then there's a, one takes on a confidence about one's personal identity.
And obviously, French clothing, that they do, they do have a flair for femininity, don't they?
And you've been learning
from that, haven't you?
I have been learning from that, but what I've actually learned is that the French can be quite conservative. They have a certain degree of chic, but I wouldn't say that they naturally tumble to something that's as innovative and individual as the things that I'm making.
Can you take me through the process of, once you become inspired and you get an idea for something, how does it come together into one of your items?
I have a huge collection of fabrics, and the manner in which it works is something like this. The fabrics are like a palette of colour, and I keep everything as visible as possible, which actually necessitates a certain level of chaos. And I seize on combinations of texture and colour, and bring those together. That's often, the colour and texture is very often the springboard. Then I have a mannequin stand, rather beautiful, it's about 80 years old, what's called a Stockman, which is a brand name. Is a magnificent Edwardian form, and I drape the fabrics around the form and discover how the fabrics move and how they want to fall and how they sit comfortably or not with each other. I might have to make some radical changes. So I'm experimenting with the forms as I go along. The forms emerge from the quality of the fabrics.
Is this very much about creating that? I mean, some of your costumes have large folds in them, they have very bold designs. Mm-hmm. They have lots of ruffles and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that gives you very much a sense of being female as well, isn't it?
Yes, that's an interesting observation. And they're fluid. Yeah. But not always. Yeah. I've also worked with a fabric that I actually found in Paris, and it's a quite rigid fabric, but people love it. It's not that easy to wear. It has a certain degree of rigidity, so which is much more, in a way, can lend itself to something slightly military in a curious way. But it also has a lovely sound, and it rustles, and I think that might be the female within the fabric.
You also paint. Obviously, the paintings you do are wonderful abstracts. Mm-hmm. They're very pleasing to the eye. I mean, I have to say that they have lovely aesthetics. They have a kind of a faded feel about them. Can you tell me about those? Because they're things like fountains, birds, and flowers, and abstract shapes. How do those work?
Well, to go back, when I first started painting, I was making very, it was always been abstract, but it was much more closely linked to German abstract expressionism and very bright colours. And there came a point at which I decided, you know, the level of colour almost exhausted itself, and I thought, right, I'm going back to something much more spare and elemental. I spent some time in the desert in Israel, also in Morocco, and in that time I became very, very absorbed by the minimal colour of the sand colour, the greys, the stone, the Hamada of Morocco, very subdued elemental colours. And so I tossed out all the colour in the painting and started making these very minimal abstracts with very little colour. With hindsight, I can see now, this is work I was making in the 90s, they're just like textiles. They have such a striking resemblance to veils of very translucent fabric.
And you're trying to get down to a sense of humble purity in them, which is great. And the themes of purity and regeneration are very important to you, aren't they? As well as having some connotations of religious backdrop to that as well.
I'm very interested in the enclosed garden traditionally of the Virgin Mary, a very specific location. To do with fecundity and certainly regeneration, and the reference to the natural world, the abundance of flowers, of insects, of birds. I think that links back to my interest in the motifs of the Japanese textiles tradition.
Are you working on new clothing and new paintings at the moment?
New clothing.
Yeah.
And an idea to introduce visual elements that I have created within the clothing. But that's in parentheses at the moment. That involves a certain amount of technical assistance, so I'm holding back on that.
Are you having any shows or exhibitions in Cambridge in the next few months?
Not in the immediate future. Certainly at some point next summer. I'll be showing in London at some point towards the later part of this year. Well, we're already in the last 6 months. And I'll be showing my work at Persephone Books in Lambs Conduit Street in London. There'll be a vernissage, an opening in the museum in Denmark in October, but nothing specific to Cambridge. At the moment,
people can follow you on your website.
That's true.
Can you give me the web address for that?
www.brenda-mayo-design.com.
Great stuff. And obviously, to cap it all off, you have another talent, which is that you're a musician, you're currently learning to play the cello.
Yeah.
So, can we hear a little bit of cello?
I will try.
Okay. Thank you.
That is very good. Don't you think? Brenda Mayo was speaking to Simon Burton of Arts Roundup. If you want to know more about the arts scene from around Cambridge, can I point you in the direction of Simon's podcast? You'll find it along with all the others at Cambridge105.fm. Look for our Listen Again section. It's like down the bottom of the front homepage.